On this week's show, discussing scalable innovation to the rescue with Todd Wynn from Rogers O'Brien and Chris Callen from Plot. That's right, we got two guests today.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right. Normally, I jump in, talk to my co-host, but I got two guests, so I'm just going to make them awkwardly sit there while we pause for the cause. I'm here with Sasha Reed from Procore.org, and we're here on the pause for the cause. I'm really interested, and I wanted to bring out some of the partnerships that we're adding here at the ConTech Crew. So why is it important for, you know, shows like ours and industry partners like you to really come together and tackle mental health awareness and the suicide issues that we have in the industry?
It's a great question. And I think the thing to keep in mind is whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's why we're changing the name of the cause for the show for the pause for the cause, so that we can really go after not just, and we're not leaving preventconstructionsuicide.com and Cal Buyer. You know, Cal started us on this awareness path. And, it, you know, to me, it's like, you know, we've been looking at the symptoms for so long. It's time to look at the source of the problem itself. And so that's what we're going to be doing here at the Pause for the Cause. You never know who's going to show up. If you're listening in and you have resources and you want to bring it to us, bring it to us. This is a free partnership. It's going to take us all pulling in the right direction. And it's what I'm passionate about here and what I think the entire crew is, and you at Procore.org are as well. So you just go to Procore.com/safety-qualified. But watch, we might soon have some more resources on thecontechcrew.com. Sasha, it is so awesome to sit down with you. I'm excited for our partnership. And listen, I want to let everybody listening in know that there are resources at Procore, but there's always preventconstructionsuicide.com. Or if you need help right now, dial 988 or text from your mobile phones for instant help. All right, we are back. I am super excited. I have Todd Wynn, Chief Innovation Officer for Rogers O'Brien with me, and Chris Callen, CEO and founder of Plot. How we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, I'm excited. I heard Chris called me up and said, hey, Todd wants to go on the show. I said, Todd can come on the show anytime he wants.
Thanks,
oh, brother. I remember back to meeting you. I'm going to do this out of nowhere on you. I met you, Procore Groundbreak, my first ever one in a breakout session at what turned into, I think, the beginning of the CPC. Mm. It wasn't the CPC at that point. It was like some weird...
Wait. Was it a Bluebeam conference? Was it the when it was the Construction PDF Coalition?
It was when it was the Construction PDF Coalition, but yeah. It wasn't Bluebeam. It was Groundbreak.
Oh, it was at Groundbreak.
It was Groundbreak.
Yeah.
And you and Joe were sitting there and you started talking. And I remember hitting Nathan and going, I got to know that guy. I got to know that guy.
You're going to make me blush, Jeff. Don't do that.
It's all right, man. That I is all right.
You just saw someone else that was passionately driven to try to make things better, just like yourself. That's all.
Exactly, man. Exactly. So, and that was, you know, your first stint at Rogers O'Brien, right?
Yes, that's correct. I am back at my home of innovation now.
Yeah, took a little detour.
Yeah, took a little detour. Had to peel back the curtain, the veil behind the software industry, and really learn how that all works.
I think that's such a unique experience. We're going to dig into that because I think, Chris, you have some similar experiences. And our meeting was Chris trying to show me some crazy thing when we were traveling the country with the JB Knowledge, with the Contact Roadshow, some, what was it? Grit, right?
Grit.
Oh, yeah. Grit. A technology that was extremely powerful, but missed a couple marks on usability. So definitely back in those days, we were shooting for the moon, and definitely learned some lessons from that experience, even later in the Grit life, but definitely now with Plot.
Yeah. And then in I think before and after, a little stint in the construction space as well, right?
Yeah. Born into a construction family, mother and father worked full time, owned it 50-50 concrete contractor in Kansas. Grew up in involuntarily involved is the way I like to put it. So nights, weekends, holidays, summer break, basically rebelled and said, I'm not doing what mom and dad do because no one follows that path immediately. So got into software. That was my degree and my first job, but realized that gratification that my parents experienced only exists in this industry. And being able to look back on a project that is 30, 40 years old, and my dad talking about, you know, rolling a shopping cart in a Sam's Club to figure out floor flatness and missing out, you know, completely any of the shopping needs that we had for that day. But that level of interest in their work was something that I just didn't have. So returned to the family company. I ran that for 4 years. That's where I met Todd. Some of those conversations, I started beating him up for software recommendations on what we should be looking at. And then that quickly led into we should build something of our own. And that birthed Grit. And like I said, it was an extremely powerful technology. Initially missed its mark as a product and a little overbuilt. We'll call it that, kind of like buying a Ferrari to go get groceries. It is a workflow that is doesn't make much sense, but definitely learned from that lesson and happy to be using those lessons learned as we build out Plot.
That's awesome, man. Cause it connected to the industry ahead and now applying the lessons to the future, which is kind of what we preach in innovation, right, Todd? I mean, that's kind of, I mean, it's not that you're unaware of that process either, right, Todd?
Absolutely. No. And it's funny when Chris was just mentioning, like, we kind of overbuilt it. God, it resonates so much with me. And it's so easy to do that when you're an initial founder. You feel this obligation to complete all of these workflow circles. Like, I got to build out the whole circle before it's going to be valuable to the industry. You're trying to really boil the ocean. And, yeah. I think that's one of the biggest lessons to an entrepreneur is like, no, just provide that MVE, that minimum viable experience, and then get a beachhead and build off of that. And yeah, big lessons learned on my journey as well. So it resonates with Chris.
So MVE is yours. I had one recently that was MLP, minimum lovable product.
Oh, I like that. Lovable. Yeah.
I heard that one recently.
Another good one is get them to the aha moment. And that was Zach Wentz, a guy that I got to work with. He's the one who taught me that. He came from Netflix and he said, Todd, the most important thing you can do when you're getting someone to really that MVE, that first experience is get them to the aha moment to where, aha, this is going to change the way I do this now.
Well, that's an interesting one because that's a book, actually.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's probably where he stole it from then.
Well, it's and he's a part of it. That's Get to Aha, which is one of the best books. Andy Cunningham, it's one of the best books. I love Get to Aha. It's all about product categorization. It's all about the DNA of your company. It's all about understanding that. And there's another one that I read first that's like way more sensationalized. but like I couldn't get anything from it. And then Get to Aha gave me like the framework to get there. And I know it was about Netflix. So I'm guaranteeing you like that's probably their like shared origin story there.
Absolutely.
Chris, go ahead, man.
No, I think there's a lot of terminology that can explain it. And I think they're all based on the perspective of the person mentioning it. And while I haven't come up with an acronym for it yet, to me, it's all about what is a piece of technology that can change a habit. And if you demo a product, if you market a product, if you show something to a prospective customer and they say, yes, I like it, even if they pay for it, that's still not there yet. It's what piece of technology, what's the smallest piece of technology you can introduce to a contractor that changes their behavior? And that usually begins with an aha, a realization of what it can do. But even that is not enough. They actually have to act upon it, because there is some level of deviation in their input from the current thing they're doing to your thing that is required for a switch to take place. So what is the prism that you introduce? What is the diverter? What is the bumper that you put up on the bowling lane that actually changes the actions of a prospective customer? And once you feel that, no matter how small that is what Todd mentioned, that's the beachhead. And you build on that and you build on that, but you can build a ton of stuff that people say they want and that they'll pay for. And literally, I used to think you get people to pay for something, that's it, you won. And it's not. That's a step along the way. But once you start to get behavior change and really realize what could be, that's where you have a product that meets that first central value of being the beachhead to build on top of.
Yeah, it's when they'll buy it twice is when you realize I found the better one.
Yeah,
when they buy it twice. So the other book is Play Bigger. So if I had to give anybody listening advice, get the audiobook of Play Bigger, and then when you're ready to run through the wall, grab Get to Aha, and that's your process book. That's the book you read that tells you step by step how to actually do it, in my opinion. So with that, I want to take you to that get that aha moment, that change, that innovation, that realization. Because Todd, you're now back in the contracting world. And I've really been watching closely that you guys at Rogers O'Brien are really taking calculated steps ahead, adopting technology, but also moving your business forward with it. So you've got to be having those aha moments. So where are some of those aha moments coming from? And how are you garnering that? And then the key to our intro is scaling it.
Yeah, that's the hard part, right? And scalability is what really determines success, because we can do some really cool things on one project or two projects with the right team, the right resources, the right tools. But to really scale the change and metabolize it across the org, that's the challenge. For us at RO right now, you know, we're going through our own transformation just in our own scaling as a company. We've quadrupled in size in the last 10 years. So therefore, what got us here isn't going to get us there. And that's a mantra that you'll hear within Rogers O'Brien right now. And that's where we're very focused on optimization. We're very focused on really retooling our organization to capitalize on our next growth cycle. And so it really starts, you know, it's funny, when I came back to RO, a lot of people were like, Todd, yes, he's going to make us innovative again and like really bring back that spark. And innovation is an outcome. That's an output. It's not an input. It really starts with mindset and being a learning culture. We know at RO that our most valuable asset are our people. We know that. But the most valuable asset that our people can have is their speed of learning. And that's where we put a lot of our focus and investment. And, you know, if we were trying to make an innovation cake and you had to have some ingredients, the ones that I would say you have to have are really first that mindset of curiosity, that there is a better way. And that's really how we define innovation at RO. It's simply a better way. It doesn't have to be some fancy gadget or technology. It could be process related. It could be material related. It can be come in many different forms. It could just be a different way of doing something without introducing anything new. It could be a change in steps or procedure. So first, it's simplifying that definition and really it's starting with that mindset and hopefully encouraging everyone in our organization to be curious and seeking a better way. And then you got to have a little courage, right, thrown into that recipe. Sometimes you got to be the one dancing when no one else is, and that's hard. It's you see it a lot actually on projects across our, not just RO, but across the industry. You see these young, driven builders that are like, I have an idea on how to do a better way, but as we all know, we're very risk averse as an industry, and so you see that person dancing alone and they're really onto something. That's where you got to then apply the learning mindset to where someone's being curious and courageous. And that's where, you know, we always say, I mean, this is from Nelson Mandela. You know, he always said, we never fail. We either win or we learn. We never lose. That's what it was. We always win or we learn. And I love that mindset. Now, that doesn't mean we're okay with failure. We hate it. Right. We do not like to lose. But when you can really change that mindset, especially in the culture of your organization, of that, hey, if we really want to be innovative, then we got to first recognize that the price of entry to even ride the roller coaster of innovation is sometimes failure and learning and the speed of learning.
You hit on a couple things there. I love the cake analogy. You know, you got to put those ingredients, and I love that you put curiosity, because to me, that's like, as a non-baker that tries to cook with my daughter once in a while, I realize that you put salt in a lot of things that I didn't understand. Yeah. I'm like, why would you put salt in this? And I'm like, courage is salt, right? Too much? It doesn't taste right.
You can really learn your lesson, right? Oversalted.
Yep. But forget the salt. And you're like, I don't know. These cookies are just missing something.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of a cookie. Like, I don't want to go back for another cookie.
Uh-uh. Right.
And I feel like that's probably too much of what many contractors do, is they might have curiosity and they might have a good mindset, but they really don't have a ton of courage to go ahead and push it forward.
I think it's because they don't know how either, Jeff. And it's one of those things where it's not inherently obvious on how. And one thing we try to do at RO is really one thing that we can relate to or correlate to in our industry is safety. Our jobs are dangerous. And what is our safety practices in construction? Well, it's to create capacity for failure to occur, right? I mean, if you really think about what a good safety program is, it's about creating capacity for failure to occur. We know that someone might fall. Is that yo-yo going to catch them, right? We know a tool might fall off the side of the building. Are we going to have the proper netting or a cocoon system that'll stop and catch it from hurting someone? I always love using the example of, like, when you're driving on the highway and you go outside of your lane, you hit those rumble strips, you're failing safely. So if we take that mindset and we apply that to how we can start being innovative in our organizations, you can actually create capacity for these learnings to occur without compromising and creating risk around your business. And that's not intuitive. These are skills and techniques that we can actually learn from other industries. And I mean, even the software industry, as we were speaking of.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I want to switch this over to Chris, because Chris, hearing that and now being back on the software side of things with Plot, what are some of the ways that you're helping contractors through that process, right? Because everybody thinks we're selling software, and you're now at the point where it's like, no, we're actually trying to support innovation, right? Support the transformation of your company, the continued update of your company, right? Keeping it going. So tell me a little bit about how that works for you.
Yeah, I think the first time around, we had a little too much salt in the recipe. It was a little bit too much courage, you know, and it was something that I was a contractor. I'd been there, but even myself, a founder of a startup company who had been in construction and been around it his entire life, even if I was correct about my perspective and how to build a tool that fit what I needed, that is not flexible enough to apply to the number of contractors necessary to make a software product successful. So you can build something internally and it work for everything you need, but even project to project within a contract are going to have different requirements. And that flexibility, that rumble strip that Todd was mentioning, is so important to have the ability to adjust for different needs. And it's not only for what you will eventually solve, it's adjusting for different value that you can present to someone in a give first manner that they will come to the table with an offering of, yes, I'm going to give this a shot. So it really comes down to, you know, we set out, you know, our product is less than a year old. We set out last July and came in and just said, you know, this is what we think. This is what we believe are problems that we've heard from the industry, we've experienced personally. But here are not one solution. Here are three different ways that we think will solve that. And I talked about this at AU back in like 18 or something. And I compared different military movements during World War II. And I won't get into the detail of that. But really what it came down to was optionality. So when we put a piece of technology in a builder's hands and it has optionality, that allows them to pull the product in one of many directions. And you can land on multiple beaches and see which one gets you the inroads to your objective. Because I don't necessarily care where we go as far as how we get it done. I care about why. I care about the impact that we can have on the industry to help move it forward, be a small part of that. But we need builders and contractors to come in and tell us how our vehicle can help them get there. And if you come in as a founder and you architect this entire product that you're going to unveil to the world and it's going to change everything, we all know how that's going to go. So incremental design. And then the other thing I'll throw out here is founders are very emotional about their product. It is their metaphorical baby that they are introducing in the world, and they don't want it to be called ugly, and they want to keep building on it. But something I learned my first go around that is front of mind right now is if we do not have validated objective response from market that what we're doing is on the right track, we kill it. We cut it off and we stop expending resources on a path that we have not made inroads on and put our resources where our contractors are going to. And that's a balancing act from following contractor feedback and not getting too far in the weeds of a specific contractor's needs, where you're in that former conversation we got to of a custom IT product, and getting to the point where you're building something that's technology for technology's sake. And to me, that is a construction technology founder's role, at least the product team, of bridging that and keeping that in balance of something that is driven by industry, but is kept flexible enough that it can be massively applied to the majority of job sites worldwide.
At the Contech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems, and we've always believed in our sponsors, so much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. Check out Join, the collaborative project delivery platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. You encompassed a couple of things there, and I like the fact that you used the word optionality, because optionality to me versus configurability, because configurability is the way of death by single cuts to almost any software, right? Because the more you do that, the more it's not scalable, to Todd's point. Now, optionality is like, hey, I have a choose your own adventure book, but you only really have three choices. You're going to go down the road, and I don't care which one you choose, and it's going to take you to a different end of the story, but it's your end of the story because you're choosing it. So I like that analogy. What I want to know from Todd, from your perspective, looking at the problem, right, that Chris is, that Plot's dealing with, and looking at giving feedback, it's an interesting conundrum. Now you've been on both sides.
Yeah.
We have to listen to customers.
Yes.
But we have to balance that listening.
Yes.
Because they're going to tell us over and over, I want faster horses, faster horses.
You got it. Exactly.
And Steve Jobs said it. How can a customer tell you something that's never been invented?
Exactly. Well, and I think that goes back to understanding the different types of innovation, right? There's two types, really. There's exploitation, and that's where we're actually taking something and trying to streamline it and really just improve it. And then there's exploration, where we're trying to find the automobile versus faster horses. I mean, Edison didn't invent the light bulb with a continuous improvement strategy around candle technology, right? so that's where there's that difference between exploitation and exploration. And really, we need both in the industry. We need to balance an investment in both of those domains. And what I loved, what I was hearing Chris say, is, you know, he's not in love with his solution. And that's what I want from a good solution provider, is I want them to be in love with our problems. Yeah. And if they are in love with our problems and we can align on desired outcomes, that's where they can bring automobiles to us. So really, it shouldn't be about us telling them what we want built. It should be about us telling them what problems we want solved. And here are the constraints of those problems. And here, let's be obsessed. I mean, I think it was Einstein who said, if I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend, 55 minutes obsessing about the problem, 5 minutes coming up with solutions. And that's the mindset we need our solution providers to be living in daily as they're collaborating with us to build a better way.
What's funny is I literally said that to somebody yesterday, and they said, yeah, but then they're going to design a faster horse on me. And I'm like, okay, combine them all together here, because that is the key. And I like that exploitation versus exploration, because actually, if you look at, you know, probably Chris, what you're doing at Plot, there was some exploitation, some big jump. And then as you're going through the next phase, there's exploration into this, that, or the other, right? There's incremental improvement of what you're doing, and then still listening and looking for a car to put on top of it. Like, you're almost stacking cars here. So talk a little bit specifically about the problem set, Chris, that you're after and that you saw and that drew you into the second round. What would make you go to the well time number two?
Yeah. So the second time around, it really focused on something I knew and something that I lived and breathed. And that was effectively the conversation between general contractor superintendent and subcontractor foreman. The conversation that happens at that terrible job site trailer inside of a portable, you know, container unit on a job site. And just really the communication between all of the different parties on that site that have manpower on the ground, and then all of the drivers, all of the other manpower that is shipping the material to that site, and then the coordination of getting that from a truck to an installation location. And that conversation is so nuanced, it is so organic, it is so unbridled, that it was really a problem that, like I said, we set out to achieve success with optionality. And what the options that came out of that were, we need to handle space management, which is really navigation. And that came to form through a logistics mapping tool. And then we said, we put that out in the world, and they said, that's great, but my driver coming to the site for one time doesn't care about the 14 other locations that other drivers might go to. And what that really did was, we needed to conceive the concept of time, and we needed to have that management of who's coming to the site when, and where exactly they're going. And that manifested itself into our scheduler and more of a calendar interface that allows the project team to work in something they know and breathe every day, a shared calendar, but with some scheduling logic on top of it that cuts away from the conversations that happen on a day-to-day basis and a mass majority. And then our new module, Lead Times, is taking that concept and just moving it from the delivery point back to the order point to make sure that subcontractors are ordering materials on time to make sure that they're delivered on time. And it's a very simple, these are all extremely simple things, but A, they have so much nuance, so much flexibility, and they are hundreds, thousands of decision points on a typical job site that are today unformatted. They're completely free flowing. They're never captured. And it's an extreme, frankly, it's a waste of time for all parties involved. They have skill sets. They have problems that need to be solved. Managing these kind of coordination type discussions is well beneath their ability set. And we want to get them back to work. But those are the three areas. And we talked about optionality. And I agree. When I say optionality, that means up to three. And that means that you have either two or three as your way to enter and solve a problem. And if you have another idea or another, you know, exploration opportunity pop up, you've got to kill something in order to open up that new front, because your resources need to be dedicated in earnest to give full attention to the exploration that makes sense. So I can't agree more with what Todd mentioned about how you move through those innovation structures. But Plot was very much said, what are the conversations happening on the job site? What are the text messages, phone calls, and why are our meetings as long as they are? Why do we have huddle and then a weekly coordination and then a procurement meeting and then an afternoon huddle? And why do we still have misses when we live in a world that can be more communicated and coordinated? And we can take a lot of these low-level activities and move them into a software program that can take on the heavy lifting and create a visual into the information that is easier for a foreman to log in, check their email, see, these are the three deliveries I have this week. These are the two orders I have this week. Boom, boom, knock it out and get back to real work.
So this is a rarity. That's a great explanation of it. Todd, why would you and what did you see in Plot that made you want to start to take a role in taking a look at it and seeing if it's right for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, Chris hit on a lot of it. It really comes back to, I mean, the pain that we experience is that superintendent having to have the same redundant message to every single delivery driver, right? Or every single trade partner. So it's really trying to automate some of that redundancy out so that we can really get him to focus on him or her to focus on what is most important. And that is the build, not having to repeat yourself saying, hey, this is our delivery gate, or this is the time that deliveries are available. And it really touched on that pain point for us now. But from a more holistic standpoint, I think Chris mentioned something that I'm very passionate about, and that is the two dimensions that we operate within: space and time. Like, you can take any specific construction element and it will relate to those two dimensions. We're essentially, you know, I always like talking to my friends outside of the industry of how construction works. And I love using the Lego analogy, which we've heard many times. It's, we're putting these Legos in place, and these Legos have a specific X, Y, Z location in the real world, and they have to go in a specific sequence of events. So space and time. And that's one thing, and I think you'll know from my previous startup days, like, that was something that I was very passionate about and still am today, that, okay, well, if that's the reality that we build in, why do we not organize our information within those two domains? And that's where I think that we're still living by paper rules in this digital world. So no, kudos to Chris for seeing the same thing and organizing more information based on the way that we actually perform the work. That's what attracted me to it.
And it's so funny that you talk about kind of the numerous, you know, replying the same thing like you're an answering machine over and over. It was so, shout out to Mitch on the Rogers O'Brien project. When I gave our first demonstration call to him, and this happens on most of my demos, which is awesome. If I do a demonstration for a superintendent, they get a phone call during the meeting, and it's a superintendent. They get a phone number call. They don't have that number saved, so they don't know who it is. It could be an inspector, it could be a telemarketer. So, but they have to pick up the phone. So, like, oh, excuse me a second, and I said, yeah, absolutely, take the call. And I could hear him in the background. He said, no, you got to go around. You know, you got to go from the north. You got to come from. And he hung up that call and came back on. He's like, your product's going to solve that. And it was so instantaneously in the moment. And it was, but don't get me wrong, it was a minute and a half phone call. It's a small thing, but you compound it not only by Mitch's time, but the other personnel on that job site. And then the person on the other end of the phone call has that same waste. And then so does the foreman who purchased that material. Yeah. And it's just, it is so compounded that it is a problem that is massive, even though each individual only experiences a sliver of it at a point in time. But to us, that is a pure example of the evidence of the problem that we aim to solve.
I want to hit on this, though, Todd, you said it. We are still living in a paper-based world.
Yep.
I don't think enough people understand what that means. So define what that means, that we still live in a paper-based world, because, well, I got a form on my phone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what we did, right? We took the physical file cabinet and we digitized it. We still operate. We're still digging through which folder, where did I put this? And it's because we took those same organizational constraints into the digital world. The beauty of the digital world is that we actually can work very fluidly with unstructured data, with search and contextual filtering and proactive notificationing. And there's all these new domains of pre-filtering your next best move. And we don't take advantage of those enough. The technology exists, but our industry isn't asking for it enough and pushing for it enough, because I think we don't know what we don't know. We assume that, well, this is how we've always done things, and this is the way we have to do things. I was just down at Procore's office the last couple of days, and I was telling them, you know, we've gotten it digital, but we're still not there. We have to. When I'm on the 22nd floor of a tower, I'm still scrolling past my landscape drawings. Like, I want to build with context, Jeff. I want situational awareness. I want, whenever I'm focused on a task at hand, to have the information pre-filtered based on where my headspace needs to be. That is, you know, I think too many of the software companies have checked the box that we've digitized construction. Yes, you've made construction digital, but you haven't cleared the chasm of actually bringing the significant efficiency that has yet to be gained. I mean, I know there's stats out there of how much time, and I've heard like 40% in a project engineer's day or a project manager, of where they're just piecing together the information so they can make a decision. I honestly think that's super conservative. I think it's over 50%. I know it was whenever I was in operations. And it's not that the decisions to be made are that difficult. It's the process that our people in construction right now, our builders, they're not getting to focus on the build. Instead, they're having to be manual information alignment managers. They're having to go and piece together the information so that they can make a decision. And that is what makes me feel like I live in a twilight zone, guys. It's like the technology is here, yet we're still living by paper rules in this new digital world.
I just want to put on top of that, horses to vehicle analogy there is, even if you make a faster vehicle, that still transcends the same route. So you have a faster vehicle that's traveling from city to city on the same road. It used to be a trail and now it's a road, but it's still connecting the two areas. You're still traversing the same path and it's the same distance. How do you elevate to a vehicle that doesn't use the road at all? And to me, that's the type of exploration that's required to find something that's truly transformational. And you find something that flies from airport to airport and takes a completely different path. And I believe that our industry has had the necessity of going through the transformation we've seen over the last 10 years from accelerating our vehicle from analog to digital. But I do believe we're at the point now where we have solutions that will not only change the interface with the human, but it will transfer how data is shared between them and the paths that it take. And I think that's why I'm here. That is the evolution of a technology solution that gets me and other technology founders so excited, and something that I think Todd is asking for. But it has to be rooted in today, yes, in order for it to be achievable.
We have a bridge that gap, right, Chris?
We have to have a bridge. And the bridge has to allow us to go there, but it cannot be our constraint. Once we get there, we have to be able to leave it. And that is the double-edged sword. That is the catch-22 of innovation, is we have to live in today and move forward. But once we're at that forward point, we have to detach and we have to keep on moving.
Yeah. And you know, I always hear all these people talking about all the new processes they're doing. What I would much rather us discuss is what processes are we stopping doing?
Yep. And you hit a couple of things there. It's digitization versus digitalization. They're very different. One is just turning paper into some form of data, which is an improvement.
Sure.
And Chris, I wasn't even thinking about it, man, but it's crazy because you do have to keep driving on that road, right? Business needs to keep driving on that road and keep delivering its deliveries until we go to the plane. But then at some point, we got to burn the boats and leave it behind, right? And there's that hard moment to figure out when we burn the boats and we say, no, this is the way. And, you know, we get Mandalorian on it and say, this is the way and you will do it.
Yeah.
Because those present, I mean, because in sitting in Todd's chair, he's got to manage both of those, right? Yeah. Rogers O'Brien as an organization needs to deliver buildings, deliver projects, do work. And like you said, you need to take risks and have courage, but you can't fail on jobs, right? There's a balance.
We can't risk the critical path or the quality or the safety or the cost of a project, right? Those four pillars of the build: cost, quality, safety, schedule. We can't risk those. And that's why, it's funny. From the outside, it might be seen as, wow, RO's doing a lot. And so it's very methodical where we're creating that capacity to innovate. And the car has to keep going down the road, as you said. Yep. And we're trying to find the jet packs to attach to the car to hopefully get some lift off. But it has to be strategic and safe.
Well, and I want to take you to your connectedness now, right? You talked earlier about decision making. And you know, that's born and bred into what my day job is at Join, right? We're decision makers. I have spent the last 3 years studying decision making and the process and how it impacts construction and the process in and of itself. And what I was amazed at is that, yes, our product sits in a particular space currently around that, but that we miss this process and the key components of it almost everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. We don't contextualize. You said it earlier. I want it to know where I am, what I need.
Yeah.
And present it to me. How, and particularly to our space, what we saw was in pre-construction, getting ready for a Friday OAC, you spent 3, 4, 5 hours as a team of multiple people just putting data together.
Yes.
Building a PowerPoint, building a this, building a that. So you would be prepared when you walked in.
Manual data alignment managers. That's what our industry is full of, Jeff. And Join's done a great job of that. We love Join from the sense of how it actually assembles a lot of that without the need to do it ourselves. And then the other side of it is the transparency of the data in understanding. It's not hard to make a good decision when you have a lot of good data in front of you, right? It's that the reason why decisions are tough in our industry is because we're making Swiss cheese decisions. There's holes in the Swiss cheese to where we're saying, okay, we think it's this, but really behind that hole, it says not. Do not do this. It's like, we just made the wrong decision there because we didn't have it all available to us. And we couldn't take the time to continually to manually assemble it because we had to make a decision and go due to schedule, time constraints. We got to move.
Our boy Rick Kahn said it. The number one KPI in construction is time to decision making.
Yes.
And what's unfortunate is what you're talking about in so many cases.
Yeah.
Is Excel. So you talked about the qualities of a great decision, and Excel can only show you so much. And we wonder why the heck anywhere in a decision, Chris, to plot. Oh, well, my Excel spreadsheet says these things are supposed to come here at this point in time, and so I will do these things. Well, no, that only tells you what the Excel spreadsheet knows. It doesn't know spatially how far we're percent complete and what we might need and what crews might be moving fast and what crews might be moving slow. In pre-con where we are, it doesn't tell you, it tells you the cost of the tile and the tile change. It doesn't tell you what it looks like.
What it should be.
What it should be. It doesn't tell you contextually where, hey, I want to change this entryway. And you tell me south. I don't know my south from my north on a building that's not dropped in. Show me in a model. Show me where it is.
Exactly.
Give me context, right? So you need all of that.
Yeah.
And tell me that it's going to impact my schedule X. It's going to impact. There's just so much that we fail to contextualize because you're right, Todd. We're just not doing that.
We're very clearly not building with context yet.
Yeah.
Yep. Yet.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about some of the innovations that are occurring right now because it's reinforcements are coming.
I believe you. I do. I think there's a convergence that's happening amongst a bunch of modern tools.
Yes.
That have really honestly wears all of our scars that the three of us share very heavily together that informs our future, right? That's how you get there. The three of us have spent a little bit of time on the bleeding edge and now we've come back from the edge a little bit, and I'll say I'm on the reality edge of it all. And and I think that's great, right? That's part of the learning. That's part of the things that Todd you apply day to day.
Absolutely.
So I want to pivot us because we could talk about our own solutions all day, and I'm sure we would, and both of us will, you know. But Todd, you're involved in a lot of great innovation and a lot of great stuff. So I want to spend a little bit of time with those great listeners out there talking about some of the things that you're hot on in the future. So some of those convergences, some of those things that you see come in the reinforcements, where are they? What are you hottest on right now?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier of be obsessed with the problems, right? I mean, there's a lot of shiny, cool solutions out there. There's a lot of great innovations that have now transcended across the gap of other industries into our domain. And we really have to continue to be obsessed with the problem. And one of the biggest problems that I know it's probably been belabored and beaten like a dead horse, but it's real is the labor shortage. And especially the subset in that, the skilled labor shortage, right? It's getting worse every day. And I know y'all know this. I know our listeners know this, but I don't think society knows this. I don't think they know how bad it's going to get. Literally, if we can't keep up with the demands, I think right now estimates are we're somewhere between 400,000 to 500,000 people short in North America. And
while you're sitting on that, let me tell you, we were at the beginning half a million behind year over year. However, in the last month, we went up 64,000 jobs that we can't fill.
Yeah. Yeah. We feel it, Jeff. I mean, when you go walk a job, what you'll see is that you'll see that foreman, that 65-year-old foreman who knows what he's doing, has the skilled labor, and he's followed by seven apprentices and who don't know anything. And that's where I in my role, one of my responsibilities is to not just look the next 6 months, but to look the next 2-3 years out and hopefully position us in a better place in that time and bridge us to that future. So one that has been a big problem that's on my mind has been just that labor shortage and ways that we're going to combat that. One that we've been really bullish on is cobots, collaborative robotics. I know that some of our listeners might be hearing science fiction right now. Let me tell you, it is not science fiction. We have some really cool tools today that we're experimenting with. I just got back from Hilti's headquarters in Liechtenstein. They were kind enough to fly a few of us thought leaders out there to collaborate with them on some pretty amazing robotic solutions they're working on. Of course, the JBot the JBot platform is one that we tested last year and had some great success with. But then you see a lot of these, Layla robotics, Dusty robotics, Rugged robotics out of Houston, HP SitePrint, which actually we'll be testing HP SitePrint in 2 weeks on a couple projects here. But it's this idea that one, we're always trying to combat safety, dangerous conditions. And then two, it's really how we're going to combat that shortage of skill in the industry. And I think that if I would have brought up the idea of collaborative robotics 10 years ago, I would have been, booted off the job site. My question to everyone listening, though, is give me another solution. Tell me how we combat this, because I thought it was going to be education. I spent the last 5 years really focused on educating, partnered with Procore and Apple on speaking to high schools across North America. We've spoken to thousands of high schools. It's not happening fast enough. And we've lost the father to son skilled labor handed down. And when did they remove shop from high school? Like it's just our society has completely played against us in some ways, not intentionally, unintentionally, but we're now going to reap what we sow. And I don't mean to scare everyone, but I think there needs to be more fear. I mean, we talk about supply chain resiliency problems. Yes, that is all real bad problems today. But what I think is going to occur over the next 3 to 5 years is going to be detrimental, not to our industry, but to greater society.
Well, and the thing I'd like to throw in is this collaborative is as big of a word as robot in that description. And I don't think people just gloss over it. They're like, oh, it's an adjective. It doesn't mean anything. No, it is what we're talking about. And when you think about whether it be a literal, piece of machinery on site, whether it be a chatbot, whether it be whatever, and they say, oh, it's going to replace jobs. It's not going to take in one person's job and say, you are no longer out of a job and move forward. A, we don't have that luxury in construction. And B, it's going to take 20% of everyone's job and do that.
Yeah.
And that 20% is the worst part of that human workers. No one wants to do that. It is dirty, it's dangerous, or it's boring. Yes. And that is what a robot would be great at. And that's where they succeed. Yep. And that's why I'm so excited to see pragmatic robotic applications coming out to do drywall, sanding, to do upside down core drilling, to do all of these things that are not only boring, they're dangerous, but they're not what our tradespeople do the best. And it will unlock our people to do so much more that only they can do. And that should not be seen as a threat. That should be seen as a bit of it's a releasing of our abilities that our project team can move forward. And I think that people should fear it. They should fear the problem that we're facing in that regard. But these solutions are not only going to help us solve a problem, it's going to completely change the context of what we offer when we offer employment to our industry. We can get rid of some of these things that are they're difficult, they're hard, and they're dangerous. Those are the reasons that we can't recruit in some regards. And if we free those up and we remove those from the workload, I think it just opens us up to a whole different type of.
Let's give our listeners a real life example. So our equipment yard, the RO equipment yard, I was talking to our director of equipment services, Brandon Wright, and he said, you know, this tool, the Rivet Buster, it's a 40-pound Rivet Buster. He said, this tool is the most broken tool in our equipment yard. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, because it's so miserable to use it, the guys intentionally break it. You're spot on, Chris. There's jobs that we have to innovate the work away from a human, just from a safety standpoint. I mean, guys, It's 2023 and three people will die today in North America in construction. I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable. And we can do all the education we want, but we're still putting people in dangerous conditions that they shouldn't be in. The only way we're ever going to get to true zero is we have to leverage technology and innovation to bridge that gap.
Well, and that's why the cobots are so important, right?
Yeah.
Because you made a real good point, because I think if we looked at the numbers of how much skilled labor we're actually missing, it's even more.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have unskilled labor coming in. Understand that a reflection of the intelligence of the person we're talking about. It's a reflection of the experience of the person. Correct. And experience and craft is a real deal.
Exactly.
Here's where a cobot, and I'll go to Canvas because I did a bunch of research around Canvas and met with the team recently because I was doing some speaking in a wall and ceiling bureau, right?
Yeah.
And what I gleaned from it, and hopefully they listen into this one, is mudding and taping and doing those things that robot does is a skill that is just, it's not learned overnight.
Right.
Right. And they have not perfected it yet at all the levels it needs to be perfected. But everybody I talk to that really is, you know, of our mindset is going, oh, they're on their way there, to the point that robot, we will have taken the skilled labor knowledge out of the person leaving, put it into the digital DNA of the robot so that it can work with the human, augment the human, allow them to do things better. But then it's always going to have problems in certain areas.
Yeah,
totally. And so you got a human that could be running a bunch of them and could be doing a bunch of other stuff. And now they're exponentially. And is mudding and taping and those and sanding those things on a huge scale the fun part?
Yeah, no.
But take the skilled person who can do a corner and who can do a rounded edge.
Yeah. Do a feature wall. Do what a robot couldn't do, right? I love what Kevin's doing with Canvas, and they recently partnered with Hilti now.
Hilti, so, I was going to say, you Hilti people, I keep hearing you pop up. You're putting what is it on the canvas? They put the new tracks on it, and they're going to do the production line for it. Yeah. I also heard you refer to the JBot as a platform. I'm not going to let you leave without talking about
trouble.
That one.
I don't want to get in trouble. So I'll just say that I'm very excited about Hilti and what they're doing in thinking to the future of our industry on how they can continue to be a good solution provider. They've been for over 80 years. And, it's funny how when you look at someone like Hilti and go, but don't they just do the actual hand tool? Well, these are tools. These cobots are tools. And actually, they've been utilizing robotics to build these tools in their factories for a long time. So very excited about the stuff coming from them. And back to scalability, I love what is happening in the startup space, but we need solution providers that can also meet the demands of the scale requirements. And that's where someone like Hilti, I think, can provide provide that.
Yeah, they provide scale. They provide knowledge in their specificity too. Yeah. And that's 80 years in business. And, you know, if you guys don't know, Hilti's on the heavily to anybody listening is on the BIM and VDC side of things as well. Yeah. And really
Trevor
getting involved.
Owen is a big leader that's from the old BIM community and plugged in with Hilti doing some really cool stuff there. And by the way, I think it's important. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, Jeff, is that there was a connection that I missed as a VDC BIM solution provider years ago. And it was how we actually, you know, we always looked at VDC and BIM and said, okay, now we just need to connect it to operations. But I was wrong. We were missing the interstitial layer. And that's something that we've been working on retooling at Rogers O'Brien is how to bridge that gap. And field engineering. Field engineers at RO now do not live within the operations umbrella. We have pulled them into their own support service department, and we've positioned them connected to VDC in the field. And the reason why is because now these will become the robot whisperers. These will be the individuals that will take the model-based design. They understand control. They understand what these cobots need to be able to position themselves in space and to put the work in place. So that's really what I would say to the listeners is don't just be searching for the tools. You need to first start and look inward and say, are we even structured the right way to capitalize on what's coming? So innovating the org structure, it starts there.
Man, I love that innovating the org structure because org structures are the most boring thing on the planet until somebody says, yeah, but if I do it right, I'm the glue that makes your innovation actually reach the field.
And it makes basically, it scalable.
Yeah, no, but nothing we do in the back office is worth it if it doesn't impact the field and the field experience, safety, efficiencies, you know, and people go, oh, you're in pre-con with Join. How does that work? Well, it's like, if we make a good decision that sticks, we're not doing rework. So I love, you know, like you said, Chris, there are many a time we need to be drilling a hole above our head, but the fewer times we need to be doing that, the better planning we're doing, great. The better off we are, right? Because not everybody has a JBot to go do that for you.
Right.
And so, you know, and Chris, to your point, like to what Plot does is working on those different layers and those and the communication and the space and the delivery. That delivery driver is now not putting a whole bunch of things at risk by not knowing where they're going.
Yep.
And then have you ever seen a truck that has gone down the wrong access road to the wrong drop point? Those things are not easy to move.
No.
And it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So, and then what do? If we're wrong, we try and go for too long of a pick or something. And we put another giant piece of equipment at risk. Right. Yep. So we can draw all this back there, guys. And that's the key to it.
Yeah. Catering to our deficiencies, right?
Yes.
That's what we don't want to do.
No, and we really want to empower the craft. And I think you're right. You know, courage and fear is that sprinkle we need the world to be looking at and looking to us to help solve, right? We have an opportunity too. The cool part is the built environment could look extraordinarily different in the future. And we all get to be on that ride, but only honestly, Todd, and this is where I think Chris and I can agree, only if people like you running companies are willing to take and mix your special brand of all of those things of mindset, of curiosity with a sprinkle of courage to keep innovating. Without you guys, we can't do this. And,
and to the listeners, we need more of these, right? Like, even if it's just RO having this mindset, there's plenty of great thought leaders in these organizations that are pushing it forward, but we need even more. So if you're listening, be a part of the coalition, be a part of the change, have the curiosity and courage, because that's how we accelerate the momentum.
Well, that is a heck of a way to end it. Chris, I really appreciate you bringing this up and coming to me and saying we wanted to have this conversation. I probably could go on for hours. We forgot to talk about AI. We didn't go down that rabbit hole. That's okay. We'll get there someday.
To the listeners, Jeff, like right. All they've heard right. is AI, which is incredible, but
this episode recorded in 2022? What's going on? This is crazy.
It was in January of 2023 when nobody was talking about it, right?
That's
all we talk about. So, and Todd, you're probably right, right? We focused on the problem. We didn't focus too much on the rest of it. Chris, thank you so much. And Todd,
absolutely.
As always, brother, it is such a great opportunity to sit down with you, to talk to you, to listen, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys. Let's continue to make things better and move the industry forward.
I think that's what we're all after. So thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Todd Wynn and Chris Callen. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this week's show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is the Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.